Hey guys, welcome back to another Talking Flicks episode, and today we have a special one because I'm going to be talking about Oppenheimer and basically everything I know about who J. Robert Oppenheimer was, everything I know about the movie itself, and also why I think it could be Christopher Nolan's best movie yet. But before we get into the episode, I do have to kindly ask you all to please subscribe or leave an honest review, regardless where you're watching or listening to this on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or wherever. Please leave a review. It does help grow this channel. It does help grow this platform and podcast I have. So I really, really do appreciate it. And it does help bring in more sponsors and things to help deliver better content back to you guys. And before I start the episode, I do have to give a little bit of a warning that I may get some information wrong here, or I may miss some information. So if any of you guys say, oh, he's got this wrong, or oh, he missed out on this, why didn't he talk about this when it came to Oppenheimer, please don't hesitate to shoot me a DM on the Talking Flicks Instagram page. Send me a DM, say, hey, you did get this wrong, or hey, you missed out this, and this is a cool fact about Oppenheimer, or whatever it is. Just letting you know, I'm not perfect. I could make some mistakes here. However, I did put a lot of research into it, so hopefully I'm not too off the mark on a lot of the stuff I'm talking about it. But I digress, and without further ado, let's get into the episode about Oppenheimer. So Oppenheimer was a scientist. His name was J. Robert Oppenheimer. He was born in Germany, then as a child with his family, moved as immigrants to the United States, which is interesting because he ended up leading the Manhattan Project, which I'll get into later, during World War II, which was against Germany. So if Christopher Nolan can dive into that personal aspect of himself, I guess coming from German heritage, but then fighting against the Germans in a way in World War II, it could get quite interesting. But let's get into who he actually was as a person and get into the film later. So the second fact I came up with Oppenheimer was that he studied science and eventually worked with Ernest Rutherford, who was the guy who basically came up with the idea of what the atom was. There was an idea of what the atom was, but they didn't know what it looked like, how it was formed, and Ernest Rutherford came up with the method that we go by today. He came up with the image of the atom that we go by today. So he knew a lot about atoms, which is obviously what J. Robert Oppenheimer went over to meet him and work on, right? He went to Cambridge University and they studied atoms. He studied in atomic science. So obviously that led into getting into the atomic bombs. And so when World War II broke out and the US government needed to come up with some sort of bomb of mass destruction, they were in a race against Germany. And they knew Germany was trying to come up with the same thing. So the US said, okay, who can we get who's going to be the fastest and knows the most about atoms and create an atomic bomb? So they went out and they found J. Robert Oppenheimer, and they got him to be the director of the Manhattan Project. Now, the Manhattan Project was the project to create an atomic bomb where the US were racing against Germany, and to see who could develop that nuclear bomb first, because ultimately, whoever developed that bomb first was going to win the war, because if Germany came up with the bomb, what can the US do? They have to keep fighting Germany in the trenches, but they can just fly over to America, fly over to England, and drop bombs on families, civilians, and destroy so many kilometers of ground, right? The atomic bomb is the biggest bomb in the world. People are afraid to use it today because it causes so much destruction. So whoever comes up with that is easily going to win the war because the other country has to just bend over to their will, right? They can't do anything because if they argue, if they keep fighting, they'll go, we'll just drop the nuclear bomb on your country, your president, everyone will be killed. So whoever could come up with that bomb would win the war. So it was very important. They went out and they found Oppenheimer. But one thing that I'm seeing a lot about J. Robert Oppenheimer is they're saying that he created the atomic bomb. And that's what I thought. When I saw that, okay, Christopher Nolan's making a movie, a biopic on Oppenheimer, I was like, oh, about the guy who created the nuclear bomb. However, I was wrong. He was just the director of the project that led to the creation of the bomb. So he was one of many different scientists, thousands of scientists actually, that helped create the nuclear bomb. And I'm not sure if they actually had a staff of about a million people. I don't know if it was a million, maybe 100,000, but it was a lot of people working towards creating this bomb. But basically, they were enlisting people, I guess the same way they were doing for the war. Like they weren't asking if you wanted to join the fight. They were telling you, okay, you have to go fight for us, but you're going to be in the factory building this bomb. But they didn't tell them what it was. So they basically said, okay, you've got to help out the army. And they put them in this factory and they had all these thousands, 100,000, million people, whatever the number was, working on this bomb and making the metal and doing everything, but none of them actually knew what they were working towards. So that's quite interesting. It was only a select group of scientists that really knew what was happening and that were working towards creating this bomb of just mass destruction. So that's a pretty cool fact. And basically, after the war, he was then trialed and accused of treason. So after helping the US, England, all the Allied forces win the war, come up with this atom bomb that ultimately decided the fate of the war, he was then trialed for treason. They said, you were a traitor against this country. It was this weird political aspect thing. There was a weird political reason why they did it. And basically, those charges were admitted to being false in 2021, I believe, late 2021. So Christopher Nolan was already working on this movie when Oppenheimer was still technically labeled a criminal, despite everyone knowing that it was false. Of course, this guy didn't commit treason. There was just a whole bunch of reasons behind it, and I'm sure the movie will dive into that aspect. But basically, he was admitted and pardoned in 2021. So this movie will be going back and forth between that trial of them accusing him of treason and the development of the atomic bomb. So there has to be some sort of relation there, but I didn't get that far into the research for this episode, but I do know that the movie's going to be going back and forth between the trial and between the Manhattan Project where they were creating the bomb. And I believe that when they're doing the Manhattan Project scenes, that's all in color, but when they're filming the trial scenes, that's all in black and white. And this is actually the first time an IMAX movie is going to be in black and white. Because usually when you're making an IMAX film, it's recent. You know what I mean? It's a modern day film. They want it to look the best way possible, so they have it with color. But this is going to be really interesting, and I'm interested in seeing how the IMAX cameras work as black and white. That's really, really interesting. They actually built the first ever IMAX black and white camera. They didn't just shoot it and then turn down the saturation, because that honestly looks horrible. They shot it in IMAX black and white. So it's really interesting, and I'm glad Nolan didn't just go and shoot it and then make it black and white. I'm glad he actually put the time and effort into developing this special camera to shoot the movie. He knows how important that is, and I'm really interested in seeing how this turns out. I'm actually really excited for that part, because Nolan always finds a way to make every aspect of the movie a character in the film, if that makes sense. Because even from the aspect of time and the linear structure that he uses and the non-linear structure that he uses, to the cinematography, to the birds, everything is like a character in the movie. So with it going back and forth between color and black and white, that's going to play a key role. And Christopher Nolan always comes up with these incredible creative choices and these incredible creative decisions to help get across the story better and help tell the story in a very unique way. That is one thing Christopher Nolan can do, is tell a story in a really unique way. He's a unique guy, he's a unique artist, and I'm basically super excited for this one aspect. I'm harping on a lot about just black and white, but I am super excited because this could be really cool, the way he's able to do it and the way he's able to use it within the film to tell the best story possible. But moving on, why I think this film will be so interesting. So now we're getting to the actual movie. That's a rundown on who Oppenheimer was. Now let's get into why he makes a good film. Now, this is Christopher Nolan's first biopic, and I'm super excited because he's getting back into a character-driven plot, which he sort of strayed away from in Tenet. And I really like it when Christopher Nolan has a character-driven plot. You know, you look at movies like The Prestige, Dark Knight, when it's driven by one character or a two-hander between two different characters, like, he makes really good character-driven movies. And Obviously, I love Tenet. I think a lot of his films are great, but I do think that character-driven Nolan films are definitely his best. He understands how to dive into the personality of someone, how to really flesh out both a protagonist and an antagonist. He's great at that. And he tells these character-driven plots in strange ways, in unique ways. And that's what I'm getting into here, is that he has a unique, weird approach to the structure of his films. And this film will be going back and forth between the trials and the war, so it allows Nolan some room to be creative and make a style of biopic that we haven't really seen before. They do make those biopics where it's like modern day and they have their flashbacks of their childhood and all this, but this isn't about that. This is like just a 10-year period. We're not getting into from where, you know, J. Robert Oppenheimer was born to the day he's old and he's reflecting on his life. Like, it's not one of those biopics, which honestly I hate, because every biopic is just the same. It's like they're a young kid, they become great at something, they become famous, and then they have a little bit of a downfall at the peak of that success, and then they reflect on their life afterwards and form a different opinion or whatever. Whereas this is over the span of 10 years, and it's just the most interesting aspect of his life. And that's what I like. That's what I want so many biopics to do, because it's so hard to capture someone's life in 2 hours. Whereas if you can just capture a 5 to 10 year period, just a small chunk of their life, flesh out the character in that room, in that little 5 year period, you get a good movie. That allows you the time to flesh out your protagonist. It allows you the time to flesh out all the other characters, to bring in some unique aspects to the story. But by trying to span over the course of someone's entire life, it just doesn't come out as a good movie. You know, you look at The Social Network, that was another film that was a biopic, but set over the course of what, 2 years? So I really like those movies, and I think this is going to be somewhat similar to The Social Network, because that was a movie going back and forth between the trials of Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg creating Facebook. And this is obviously going to be really similar. However, it is going to be made by Christopher Nolan, who we all know is very, very weird in his approach to making stories and to telling stories. So he always makes time a character in his films. He has this weird obsession with time. Time is always so important in all the films he makes. And with this film changing between present day trials and Past Manhattan Project, you know, it's a race, you know, like the Manhattan Project was a race against Germany and time to see who could create the bomb. That allows Nolan a lot of room to play with time and to make some interesting choices. And we all know that Nolan does that often, but having that room to play between going from present day to 5 years prior making the bomb, and also when they're back making the bomb, it's also a race against Germany and the Nazis, and there's that time aspect. So this is the first time we're watching a Nolan movie where there's kind of two reasons for time to be a character in the movie. There's two different aspects of time in this film, and that's going to be really interesting. Really, really interesting, because I don't know where else he can take this idea of time. He's done it in all of his movies. There's always an idea of what time is. Sorry if there was a little pause there. My cat has just jumped onto my lap. I don't know if I should edit this out or just keep this in the episode. Maybe I just keep this in the episode. You know, my cat seems to always like to make an appearance in my podcast, but oh well, I'll just try and keep her on my lap, keep her quiet, and just keep it rolling. So back to where I was. Nolan talking about time. Nolan, you know, making time a character in his movies. This is going to be where there's two different aspects of the time. It's going to be really interesting. I don't know where he's going to take it, because in all of his movies, he's used time in a different way. I don't know how many different ways you can use time, but he certainly is obsessed, and I'm excited to see what he's able to do with the character of time in this movie. Now, what I'm also excited for is that this will be a different kind of war movie. You know, it takes place mainly in a lab and courtroom, and also, it isn't really a happy ending. You know, a lot of war movies, it is a happy ending because the quote-unquote good guys won. However, with Oppenheimer, although he beat the Nazis and beat Germany, which of course is great, he developed the bomb, and that was kind of a failure on his part. The way he saw it is that he saw that he came up with the bomb, created the atomic bomb, and he knew the destruction his invention could cause. You know, he knew that the destruction that bomb could cause and the innocent lives and families that could be killed as a direct result of his invention, which of course won the war, But he knew that it would just be so dangerous, and he knew that he was going to be death, basically. Like, he's quoted as saying that he looked in the mirror and he saw death. He saw the destroyer of worlds. Because in a way, that's what he did. You know, he came up with an idea to win a war, and of course, that's what it was about in the time, and he wasn't thinking about the future where it's like, oh, okay, after we win this war with the nuclear bomb, now what? Now we have this nuclear bomb, and we can just drop it on anyone. And then other countries learn the technology to make a nuclear bomb, and then they all have nuclear bombs, and we get to where we're at today, with countries like North Korea, with countries like America, Russia, everyone threatening each other with nuclear war. And that's going to be super dangerous. And when you think about it, he knew that it was all because of him. This one man in a world of, I don't know how many people were in the world at this time, 3 to 4 billion people, one guy came up with an idea that could destroy the entire human race. And he did that just to win a 4-year war. And of course, you'd feel horrible by that. And so that's really interesting. You know, we watch a lot of war movies and it's genuinely a happy ending. You know, like generally a happy ending because the good guys beat the bad guys. And we're like, yay, the war's over, or the good guys won, so the bad guys can't cause what they want to cause upon the world. And so this is the first time I think I'm going to be watching a war movie where it's like they won and failed at the same time. Of course, there are other war movies where it's a sad ending because someone dies, or because, you know, that's usually the reason in war movies. You know, you watch All Quiet on the Western Front or 1917, a close character dies, people lose their friends, and that's sad. But what's even more sad is when you've caused such damage in this war that's going to span over the rest of human existence. Because this isn't just a 4-year war. This is something he's created that is going to impact the rest of the time that humans are on this planet. Countries are always going to have the threat of nuclear war. And he knew this. Like, I just can't imagine what it would be like to actually feel that you can cause this amount of damage on the world. And he wasn't happy, you know. He kind of regretted what he did. And this is usually something that war movies, I guess, hint at. But I don't know if a war film was really directly about this topic. Usually they want to make it a happy ending and good guy versus bad guy, but in this, it definitely isn't good guy versus bad guy, you know? This movie definitely isn't one of those movies where it's like, oh, okay, the Allies are good, the Nazis are bad. It dives into the nuance of war in a way that war films haven't done before. All Quiet on the Western Front definitely dove into some of these nuances too, just because it was from the side of Germany. However, definitely not to this scale. And for Nolan to be doing this at this stage of his career is commendable, because he doesn't have to challenge himself with his storytelling. You know, he's proven himself already, but he's really challenging himself here. And he's walking a tightrope here, because I couldn't imagine if he was to get an idea wrong, or to maybe purport the wrong message behind this film, people could say, oh, hang on, are you sympathizing with the Nazis? Because people would be so quick to say that, just because he's showing that maybe the Allies aren't purely good. You know, and I think that's interesting. I think that's what stories should do. I think they should look at both sides of an idea. And of course, the Nazis are despicable people. You know, the people who were behind that ideology, it was disgusting. It was pure evil, and there was nothing not evil about any of their ideology, about the Aryan race, about what they did to Jewish people, what they did to people of color. Of course, it was absolutely disgusting. But I guess where Christopher Nolan seems to be taking this story, you can sort of gather from when you research Oppenheimer and from watching the trailer, is that the Allies weren't necessarily good either. They were just the better of the two evils. But what the Nazis were doing in 1940 is exactly what the English people and the English Empire was doing throughout the 16th, the 17th, and the 18th century. And the whole reason the Allied forces had the wealth to fight Germany and to fight the West is just because they did exactly what the Nazis did. They enslaved a whole bunch of other cultures, they mass murdered a whole bunch of other cultures, they took over other countries, didn't give those countries back, and still make money off those countries. So basically, what they did was just 100 years before the Nazis. But it's just as bad. However, they don't want to lose the power. They did exactly what the Nazis did to gain all this power, but they don't want to lose it. So when the Nazis are threatening that power using the same tactics they did 100 years prior, they're willing to kill a bunch of innocent lives through creating this nuclear bomb just to avoid another culture gaining that power. And I, for one, am happy that the Nazis didn't win, of course, because that would have been a horrible world if they had gained control of the world, of course. But what I think war movies fail to realize up until this point is that no one's necessarily good. You just hope that the worse, that the better of the two evils win. Not the worse of the two evils, but you hope that the better of the two evils actually win the war. And I think that's where Nolan's getting at with Oppenheimer. So, you know, of course it's a fine line. It's even a fine line me talking about it in this podcast. I don't want to say the wrong thing and be taken out of context here. And of course, same thing for Christopher Nolan. He's definitely walking a small tightrope here. He's walking on eggshells. And if he pulls it off, I think the story itself will just be incredible. The message behind that story, the intellectual depth behind Oppenheimer, if he can pull it off the way I think he can and the way I kind of know he can because he's a great filmmaker and great storyteller, this could be a really good story. And on top of that, coupled with great cinematography, great directing, and a great cast, which I'm going to get into later, could be really, really interesting and really good. And so that's what makes me think that this could be his masterpiece in a way, because it's definitely a script that he's written that I feel has challenged him the most. And I know he's been interested in Oppenheimer for some time now. He's talked about it basically for the last decade. So it's definitely been challenging for him. He's definitely had to work hard at coming up with the right way to tell this biopic, to make this movie, to tell this story. And he's definitely, you know, stressing himself here to get this film just right. And that's what makes me think this could be his masterpiece because, you know, the best art always comes out of someone pushing themselves and taking a lot of risk and, you know, not walking in comfort, if that makes sense. You know, he didn't stay in his comfort zone. Christopher Nolan could have easily made a James Bond movie, done a Marvel movie, made the same amount of money, got the same amount of praise, but no, he's gone away, he's written a really tough script, an interesting script, an intellectual script, and he's taking a lot of risk with this. So I think if he pulls it off, this could easily be his best film yet. Easily. And the main reason for that is the cast. This has to be the greatest cast of all time in movie history. It has to be. You know, when you look through the names of this cast, you've got Cillian Murphy playing Oppenheimer, of course. You've got Gary Oldman, Matt Damon, Florence Pugh, Benny Safdie, who is more known for his directing for movies like Uncut Gems and for, what's the movie there? Good Time. You know, he's more known for his directing style, but he's a great actor as well. If you watch Good Time, he's really good in that movie. And so he's a great actor and he definitely knows his scripts. He's a massive film buff. He knows a good movie when he sees one. Then you also get Emily Blunt, Sir Kenneth Branagh. Like, this movie is ridiculous. That's not even half of the cast. Rami Malek is in the movie. Like, first of all, I don't know how they can afford to pay all these people unless they're all taking a little bit of a pay cut just because they know how good this movie is. That's probably my guess because all the budget would go to the cast. When you look at those names, how ridiculous this is. Like, most of the budget would have had to have gone to the cast unless they all decided, no, I'll take a little bit of a pay cut because this movie is good. But I can't think of any other film that had many great actors in it, as much great actors in it as this one. You know, you look at Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, of course, great cast. Goodfellas, of course, all-star cast, The Godfather. But come on, this is ridiculous. Like, I just listed 8 names there that I think 7 of them or 6 of the names I just said are Oscar nominated. Gary Oldman, Matt Damon, you know, they're Oscar winners. Like, this is insane. The amount of Oscar nominated people in here, the amount of Oscar winners in here, it's just ridiculous. Like, I just feel like Christopher Nolan leading a cast this good, it can't possibly fail, right? The movie can't possibly fail. If this many great actors signed up to do the project, and not just the fact that they're great actors, but the fact that they all have really good filmographies and really tight filmographies. People like Gary Oldman, Matt Damon, Cillian Murphy, Florence Pugh for that matter, Kenneth Branagh, Benny Safdie especially, I can't really think of many bad movies they've made. There's always a couple, but for a few of them, they haven't really made a bad movie yet. So they clearly know a good script, they clearly know a good film when they see one, so I just feel like this movie is going to be insane. It's going to be excellent because I trust these people to choose the right film. And to have this many sign up to it, where you know they're taking a bit of a pay cut, they must really believe in this movie. Of course they believe in Nolan because Nolan only delivers great films, but they must really believe in this story, this film, and I think this could be one of those movies that wipes out the Oscars, even more so than Parasite. What did Parasite win, like 7 or 8 Oscars in 2020? I think this movie could do more than that. This film could be possibly one of the greatest films, if not the greatest film of all time, with the great cast they have. Of course, Christopher Nolan writing the thing, directing the thing, the amount of risk they've taken with the cinematography. This could definitely be his masterpiece, like, for sure. I keep saying that, but I really, really believe in that. Looking over those points and those topics of what I was saying about why this film will be great, why Oppenheimer makes such a great film, why it's such a good story to tell, you know, this could definitely be his best movie yet. And that's saying something because he's made Interstellar, The Dark Knight, The Prestige, but this could be the one. I'm serious. I'm looking at this cast. I really believe that this could be the one. And anyways, that, I guess, wraps up what I have to say about Oppenheimer. That's basically everything I know, everything we all know up until this point. The movie is set to come out in, what's the release date? In what, 6 to 7 weeks? Maybe a bit less? So I'm super excited for this. Let me know your thoughts. Hit me a DM if I got anything wrong. Send me a DM if I missed out on anything. But also send me a DM to just let me know your thoughts on it. Of course, leave a review. Subscribe to the podcast. I really do appreciate all the support I'm getting. So thank you. Hope you all have a lovely day. And I'll see you all on my next podcast.